we stand like Adam and Eve, waterfall, Garden of Eden. Two fools in love, so beautiful and strong. The birds in the trees were smiling upon them. Since the age of the dinosaurs, cars have run on gasoline. Where have they gone now? There's nothing but flowers. This was a factory. Now there's just mountains and rivers. You got it. We caught a rattlesnake. Now we got something for dinner. You got it. There was a shopping mall. Now it's all covered with flowers. You got it. If this is paradise,
and welcome to Living the Green Life, a show about making sustainability accessible and part of your everyday life. Today is Saturday, January 13th. Happy New Year. I'm Sarah Jane Compton.
And I am Lindsay Crum, and together we're your Green Life gurus.
We'll start the show with upcoming events in our area. In Fairfield County, on January 16th, gear up for gardening at the Garden Education Center in Greenwich at 10 a.m. Growing your own food can be easy if you follow a few simple rules. Join Director of Horticulture, Lisa Beebe, for a hands-on class that will teach you how to plan, prepare, and plant your garden for optimum results. Topics will include companion planting, planting schedules, and how to nurture healthy edible crops. Visit gecgreenwich.org for more information.
In New Haven County, head over to EcoWorks for a Treasures from the Cellar workshop. EcoWorks is a group of volunteers who are passionate about the arts and who avoid waste at all costs. They work to collect materials destined for disposal and make them available to teachers, artists, and all manner of creative folks. EcoWorks has received hundreds of pounds of beautiful lucite, acrylic, and glass beads, so they'll be bringing their beads and charms inventory up from the cellar for workshops on February 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Visit ecoworksct.org for more information.
On Long Island today, design your own terrarium in Rockville Center. The Modern Terrarium Bar by Recreate You, that's Recreate and the letter U, is a space that houses a DIY plant bar, a host of organic and plant-based products, and in-house hands-on workshops. They have an ever-evolving selection of striking containers that are brought to life by their collection of succulents, cacti, and air plants. Visit www.recreateyou.com for more information.
On today's show, we'll be talking about winter sports.
The opening ceremony of the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea, is fast approaching, so winter sports are on everyone's mind. Winter sports rely heavily on colder temperatures and snow accumulation, which are increasingly becoming harder and harder to find as our climate is warming.
Luckily, there are ambassadors and groups out there who would like to keep everyone enjoying winter sports. Two of these ambassadors are skiers Greg Hill and Chris Rubens, who star in the documentary The Curve of Time. The film, directed by Jordan Manley, looks at the connection between the environment and winter sports. Throughout the film, Hill and Rubens try to become more sustainable athletes.
By the end of the film, Hill realizes the impact of his choices in getting to his skiing locations. He changes his car to an electric one. He puts away his snowmobile. He chooses skiing locations which are closer to home, in British Columbia versus flying all the way to Norway, and stops eating meat on weekdays. But what about those of us who aren't professional skiers and still want to enjoy winter sports sustainably?
Well, there are groups out there just for that. Protect Our Winters, or POW, is a mix of diehards, professional athletes, and industry brands mobilizing the outdoor sports community to lead the charge towards positive climate action. Protect Our Winters calls for climate activists and suggests the following six actions.
Number one, find your biggest lever for change. Do you own a business? Do you have a large social media following?
Number two, get political by either thanking or challenging your member of Congress or governor and attend a local town council meeting.
Number three, educate yourself by keeping up with news on climateprogress.org or grist.org.
Number four, speak up by talking to your family and friends and write a letter to the editor at your local paper about climate change.
Number five, talk to business Talk to the business where you work or support companies that put the environment first.
And number 6, change your ways by eating less red meat and reducing your energy consumption at home. You can find out more at protectourwinters.org. The Pyeongchang Organizing Committee for the 2018 Olympic and Paralympic Winter Games is doing their part for sustainability as well. The committee wants systemic implementation of sustainability, so they are applying the International Standard for Event Sustainability Management, that's ISO 20121, to the Winter Games.
That means applying 4 principles: stewardship, inclusivity, integrity, and transparency. And the Winter Games have a sustainability vision, New Horizon for Sustainability, furthering benefits to people and nature. And they even created a Pyeongchang sustainability mark. The mark represents the image of sustained circulation and expansion by using the Korean word for sustainability.
But what does this all mean in terms of strategy, you might be wondering? Well, the Winter Games have key themes for sustainability, including the environment, the economy, and society. So, for the theme of a low-carbon green Olympics, that would include sustainable construction and self-sufficient renewable energy. For a theme of stewardship of nature, you'd need to restore damaged nature and purify polluted water. For a theme of good life, that would include the development of local economy and ensuring a sustainable event legacy.
And for the theme of proud people with tradition and culture, that would include encouraging citizen participation and considering diversity of Olympic Game participants. Last but not least, the theme of globalizing Pyeongchang and opening it to the world would include maintaining safety and security for Korea and complying with international standards and promoting sustainability activities. You can find all this information and more at www.pyeongchang2018.com.
Next, we'll hear from Kaylee Mulligan all about the sustainable aspects of the last Winter Olympics in Sochi.
Kaylee Mulligan is a program associate at the Pisces Foundation, which seeks ways to accelerate to a world in which people and nature thrive together. Her work at Pisces focuses on the environmental education program. Previously, Kaylee worked for NatureBridge, a nonprofit organization that operates environmental science education programs for youth in national parks. As summer programs manager, she oversaw the sales and marketing, operations, and education aspects of summer programming.
Prior to that, Kaylee served as director of the Coastal Center at Milford Point, one of Connecticut Audubon Society's 4 regional nature centers. She managed the daily operations of the Nature Center while strengthening development efforts and increasing the number of students served by its environmental education programs. She also has previous on-the-ground experience as a naturalist for Sierra Outdoor School. Kaylee has a Master's of Environmental Management from the Yale School of Forestry and Environmental Studies and a BA in Environmental Studies from Yale University. Kaylee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
So in addition to the impressive credentials mentioned in your bio, you also have a bit of experience with the world of winter sports, which is what we've been talking about today. And we wondered, can you tell us a bit about Team Climate and the work that you did during the Sochi Olympics?
Absolutely. So Team Climate was a project that was originally envisioned by 2 of my fellow grad students at the Yale School of Forestry and Environmental Studies, Diana Madsen and Taylor Reese. They saw an opportunity to bring the climate change discussion to the forefront of the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympics. But through a class that I took my first semester at grad school, the International Environmental Organizations and Conferences course, a team of 5 of us designed and implemented a campaign to rally the global winter sports community around climate change. Obviously the Olympics were the perfect stage to call for climate progress because they themselves offered an opportunity to raise awareness on climate change in a new context outside of the more traditional technical environmental conversation. We wanted to capitalize on the opportunity of winter athletes who have a huge media presence and platform and also see climate change issues firsthand and are intimately involved with our changing climate as it, really threatens their day-to-day lives and livelihood.
I would love if you could talk a little bit more about it, because I really think you make a great point when you mention the fact that it was sort of a previously untapped platform, and the fact that sports and athletes, they just have such a huge audience. It's just such a perennial area of interest. People love sports. And so the fact that there is this really crucial relationship between athletes and you know, the outdoors. What, yeah, we'd love to hear more about that.
Right. Absolutely. So, as you may recall, back in 2013 and 2014, gearing up for the Olympics, there was no shortage of storylines emerging about Sochi, about hosting the Winter Olympics in a subtropical region, about all of the infrastructure that had to be built to support an effort of that size. And we wanted to make sure to capitalize on the plethora of available storylines and to make sure that one of those storylines was that of climate change. So what we did is we partnered with a nonprofit organization called Protect Our Winters that I can talk a little bit more about later, and really use stories of current and past Olympians who are already feeling the efforts of that reduced snowfall. We worked with those athletes in advance of the Olympics. We prepared them with talking points, with the science and the facts behind it, so that if they did have that opportunity for a soundbite right after their big Olympic victory or chatting with a reporter on the sidelines, gearing up for their run, they had, ammo and the ability to cite real facts that were bolstered by their personal experiences and their firsthand experience. So over the course of the Winter Olympics, we partnered with 16 Olympians. We were talking about hashtag warming winters, trying to, you know, keep it fresh, have a big media presence through both traditional media and social media. We were able to support 6 different op-eds being published during and after the Winter Olympics in posts such as, you know, USA Today, The Guardian, Boston Globe. And, you know, when we calculated at the end of this effort how big of a reach we had, we, through all of our traditional media sources and social media sources, reached over 300 million viewers, specifically about team climate change, warming winters, and using Olympic athletes as the platform for all of this. So it was a pretty incredible experience to be a part of.
That's amazing. And it's like you knew I was going to ask the metrics question and how you quantified impact. That's hugely impressive. It's amazing.
Thank you. It was humbling. It was empowering. It was exhausting.
Yeah.
It was everything. And we were able to follow it up with an in-person event back at the Yale School of Forestry afterwards with Andy Newell and Mike Richter to, you know, be on stage and to talk about their experience and to really bring it home.
That's great. So can you talk a little bit more about Protect Our Winters?
Yeah, absolutely. So before I came on the project, Diana Madsen and Taylor Reeves, like I mentioned, was kind of their brainchild. They partnered with Protect Our Winters, which really is seeking to harness that committed group of athletes and industry brands to try and mobilize the outdoor sports community to lead the charge towards positive climate action. Mm-hmm. And I really love, you know, what they use to try and create change. So there are 3 pillars you might have mentioned. Mm-hmm. There are 3 pillars of environmental education, advocacy, and community-based activism. And, you know, they, like Team Climate, recognize the disproportionate influence that can be harnessed for positive good of Olympic athletes, their profile, their newsworthiness, their, you know, the economic influence of the outdoor community, and how passionate their participants are. So they use outdoor sports as the avenue for public connectivity to climate change. And so during the first week of the Sochi Games, Protect Our Winters partnered with 105 signing Olympians to pen a petition about, you know, snow conditions, about how inconsistent they're being, about how erratic the weather patterns are and how our climate is truly changing and we are losing our winters. And they wanted to use the platform, use their voice, and try to create positive change from that.
I also really like, I'm just thinking about the way this was all framed and the notion of losing our winters, but I really like the fact that the name of this project and organization is Protect Our Winters. Right. There's something very, I don't know, it's a more positive framing, I feel. It's a very action-oriented and like almost more forward-thinking framing, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely, and I think, if I had to generalize, I would say that is a trend that we're actually seeing in a lot more or I hope more environmental organizations in general is trying to steer a little bit away from the doom and gloom.
Yes.
That, you know, kind of hopelessness factor to, there's no time to be hopeless anymore. There's only time to take action. So what do we do? How do we mobilize? And how do we take that solutions-oriented approach to really protect our world, our climate, our planet, because we have to.
Exactly. So well said.
Yeah. If you are just tuning in, this is Living the Green Life with Lindsay Crum and Sarah Jane Compton. Kaylee, what are some of the biggest takeaways you got from the athletes that you spoke with?
I had such an incredible opportunity to speak one-on-one with some really powerful, impressive Olympic athletes who, for them, the issue on climate change isn't large, it's not intangible, it's not global in so much as it's real, it's personal, and it's an immediate threat. So some of the biggest takeaways that I got from the athletes were the fact that the changing climate is not necessarily just happening on a 100-year or 50-year time spread. Mm-hmm. It's happening in a year. It's happening in 5 years. It's happening when one Olympic athlete goes back to a glacier that he trained at 2 years prior, and he sees 100 feet of receding glacier line. And he, without, you know, necessarily the scientific basics or the facts in hand, looks at it and says, that's not right. There's something wrong with the speed of what's happening here. And then takes that, there's something wrong, to what can I do about it? So I really felt empowered by the Olympic athletes that took that fear, that shock, that awe of, and turned it into, it's my responsibility. It's my responsibility to help remind everyone what's at stake. It's my responsibility to talk about how many races are being canceled because of a lack of snow. My responsibility to, you know, to name what's really happening and not take this sitting down and not say, okay, well, fake snow will be used or refrigerators will be brought on site, but to instead come together as a united front, because these are athletes that rely on mountains and snow for their sport, for their livelihoods, and for their passions. And through that, they really recognize that they could be a force of positive change, because, you know, it's not that if we don't get a handle on climate change, there won't be winter sports anymore. There won't be winter.
Right.
And they see that and they want to act, which is, I think, just one of the biggest takeaways is how much ownership they feel over really wanting to use their platform to make a change and how it works. I think it's really impressive to see it in action.
That makes so much sense. And yeah, the ownership piece and the personal piece. Mm-hmm. I think so often the way communicating about climate change resonates is when you can make it personal. And so it really, really makes sense. But it's great that it doesn't stop there. It's not met with this feeling of paralysis. It's back to your earlier point. It's okay, no, action. That's what needs to come out of this. So now, you know, we are on the cusp of another Winter Olympics in February. Do you have any sort of general thoughts about, you know, similarities and differences in the climate landscape now that we've got another Winter Olympics coming up?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think a lot has changed since the Sochi Winter Olympics. There's been a change in the scale of climate discussions. You know, we've seen such global actions as the Paris Climate Agreement and the Kigali Agreement on HFCs, and there's really been a lot more momentum. Unfortunately, some of that momentum comes from the immediacy of the issue, unfortunately, because it can spur action. You know, I'm currently in California, where Pisces Foundation is based, and I'm finding that climate change is much more a part of the daily conversation than ever before, with our wild swings from severe drought to damaging floods to now the horrific wildfires that have been taking place previously in Northern California and Southern California. And so the dialogue, I think, has really changed from it's a future problem to it's a now problem. Mm-hmm. It's not an issue that, you know, Winter Olympics in the future might have to helicopter in fake snow to keep the games going, but in the sense that ski resorts are actively closing due to lack of economic viability, and that scientists are predicting that more than half of the 103 ski resorts in the Northeast are at risk of not even being able to maintain a 100-day season by 2040. And so I think in terms of the similarities and differences, I think that the conversation has been brought more to the forefront. I think that the upcoming Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang are thinking about and building out strategies for the sustainability of the games, which is always great. I'm hopeful to see how that plays out in real time. But it is a conversation that's happening, which is, you know, really the first step.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you mentioned some upsetting statistics and things that are maybe on the horizon in terms of the numbers of ski resorts closing and, you know, the economic viability not being there. So to continue this theme of forward thinking and action, what advice do you have for an activist who might be interested in the intersection of climate and sports? What are some good tangible steps that you might be able to recommend?
I encourage anyone that's interested in the intersection of climate and sports to dig in. I think that over the course of Team Climate, there are a lot of lessons that we learned. Number one is that patience and persistence really do trump persuasion. That sometimes you have to wait for the right moment and be ready to pounce and harness it. So, for example, one of the op-eds that we were trying to help an Olympic athlete place was turned down by a news outlet in advance of this Olympic athlete winning a bronze medal in the Olympic Games. Immediately following his Olympic victory, we resubmitted the op-ed, and it was picked up by a large news outlet. So it's one of those things where, you know, I really recognize the persistence and the patience required to be ready to move on action when the action is encouraged and welcomed, and to really build up your base of knowledge, of facts, of explanation, so that you are ready when that moment comes. We also learned that it was really important in terms of climate and sports to move beyond stating the facts. You know, like you mentioned, one of the things that's most powerful about this intersection is the athlete voice. It's the unique firsthand experiences. It's the fact that one person has a compelling story about their experience looking at a glacier that's receded 100 yards. It's recognizing the audience. It's recognizing that there are different types of supporters and different voices speak to them in different ways. So to not only have the science and the metrics, which resonate very strongly with some of us, and also to have the personal qualitative reasoning behind what you're trying to do. And then I think the last thing that I would say in terms of this intersection of climate and sports is to recognize the changing audience and to recognize the changing media, to know what works, to know what goes viral in today's day and age, and to know how things get picked up, and to just, again, be persistent and find that opportunity.
And I feel like people are so clever now when it comes to the social media piece, but you're right, just really trying to stay on top of it, you know, not that writing letters to the newspaper is a bad idea, but just really being on it with what's current and fresh, which is to your earlier point about the hashtag that you guys used back in 2014, really that kept it fresh.
Yeah. And do you think Team Climate had any lasting effects for the future games?
I think that Team Climate had a really unique role to play in encouraging the conversation. Mm. I think that a lot of Olympic athletes with Protect Our Winters, or even just on their own, really wanted to use their voice, but weren't entirely sure how, through what venue, with what backing evidence. And so I like to think of Team Climate as the catalyzing cog in that wheel that really turned it from a desire to act to action. And I think that Protect Our Winters and a lot of other organizations and a lot of athletes on their own have really been taking that that step from I want to I will. And so I hope that team climate had an effect. I think that the more conversation about climate change in sports, the better. Yeah. Every article matters. Every tweet matters. And so to be able to show the reach that we had, I think that I think it made a difference.
I think so, too. I'm going to vote yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
And just one other question. You mentioned that there were other resources out there besides Protect Our Winter. Can you name a few for listeners who want to know more?
Yeah, absolutely. We had the great fortune to partner with a bunch of wonderful organizations doing great work. We worked with the Yale Project on Climate Change Communication. We worked with Climate Nexus and Goal Zero, as well as the Yale Forum on Climate Change in the Media. And it was really wonderful to get to use all of their expertise to help us build the best case, to help steer us in the right direction, to help us decide, do we go all in on a video? Do we go all in on a social media viral campaign? Do we go with traditional media? And to really use their experience and expertise in these fields to help drive us toward the greatest impact.
Today we heard from Kaylee Mulligan from the Pisces Foundation, who also worked with Team Climate during the Sochi Winter Olympics. We learned that patience and persistence trump persuasion. If you want to work on issues of climate change, ready yourself with the facts and knowledge so that you can be ready for any opportunity to act.
We also learned that the issue of climate change is real and personal for athletes, but they are spurred to take action and ownership.
And don't forget that everyone has a voice. Figure out your leverage point and use it.
Thanks for tuning in. Hear us every second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. and listen to previous episodes on WPKN.org and SoundCloud.com.
If you have an idea for a future show, contact livingthegreenlife@WPKN.org.
Cars have run on gasoline. Where have they gone now? There's nothing but flowers. This was a factory. Now there's just mountains and rivers. You got it. We caught a rattlesnake. Now we got something for dinner. You got it. There was a shopping mall. It's all covered with flowers. You got it. If this is paradise, I wish I had a